You're listening to Inside North Central Massachusetts, powered by the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce.
Hello, everyone. My name is Roy Nascimento, President and CEO of the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to thank you for tuning in to this edition of our live chat series this morning with our guest, Mayor Mike Nicholson of the City of Gardner. And I believe joining the mayor this month, we also have Maribel Cruz, the city's economic development coordinator, as a special guest. Since the start of the pandemic, we've made it a priority to deliver relevant information and programming to you, hosting over 80 different online programs and forums that have helped to inform, educate, and connect our members. We remain committed to continuing to provide these types of forums. We know it remains critically important for you to stay informed and connected with our communities. Today's live chat is intended to be an opportunity for you to hear directly from the mayor on what's happening in Gardner, the city's response to COVID-19, and to ask questions. Feel free to post any questions you have in the comments section, and we will try to get to as many as possible during the program. Today's program is also being recorded and will be available for viewing on our website later this week. And I wanted to just note that we've launched a new podcast series called Inside North Central Massachusetts. And today's program will also be available sometime next week as a podcast for your listening pleasure. I'd be remiss if I didn't express our thanks to Mayor Nicholson and his team for participating in today's live chat in order to keep business leaders informed and updated in what has become a very fluid situation. And the mayor has been great about his willingness to engage with business community and very gracious about answering questions. Just a reminder that we are planning on holding these online live chats on a monthly basis until it is safe to resume face-to-face meetings. You can check our website, www.northcentralmass.com, for information on the live chats and other programs. And again, I want to thank the mayor for participating, and let's get started. I'd like to turn over the program to Travis Condon, the Chamber's Public Affairs Manager, who will moderate today's live chat. Travis, it's all yours.
Thank you, Roy. And again, thank you, Gardner Mayor Mike Nicholson, and later on, Maribel Cruz, from the Economic Development Director for the city as well. I want to thank you both for joining us today. Mr. Mayor, I wanted to start off talking about kind of the winter weather we've been having. In the wake of the additional snow yesterday, people online had some questions about how they can sign up for Code Red notifications and how they can get notified about things like the parking ban and other snow-related issues in the city. So how does that process work?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you very much, Travis and Roy, for having me here today. It's always a pleasure to join you guys on our monthly chats that we've been having here. We are very quickly making up for the fact that we had a very mild December in terms of snow in the past week and a half and the week ahead for sure. So one of the things we do is we would try to make sure residents know as best they can whenever we do a winter parking ban, as those are on an all-call basis here in Gardner. So to sign up for that, you can go to the city's website. There is a button right on the homepage, or you can go to the police department's website to sign up to get Code Red calls. They're similar to when I worked in Rutland, we had Swift 911. Some places have what's called Reverse 911. Ours is Code Red. When you sign up there, it's your name, your address, and phone number. And then you just confirm that, and it's good to go from there. The way it works too is through the Code Red system. The city doesn't know about when these go out, but you will get notifications from the National Weather Service too if there are things like a severe thunderstorm, a tornado warning, and things of that nature to your phone. One of the things we try to do is utilize that service as best we can when needed. We won't overuse it because we don't want to water it down so that people get used to, oh, that's just the Code Red call. You know, I don't have to answer it. We do want to make sure there are important notices going out over it. So we have an ability on our dashboard for it to draw out a map over the city to make sure the call can only go out to certain areas. We utilize that if there's ever a water main break in the city to notify people that we know the break is in existence and that we are working about it, and to know the estimated length of time that it'll be before water is restored. We have also been using it to let people know when vaccination appointments become available. We do send out a Code Red every time one of those goes out as well. One of the things we did notice is that if I record a message for it to relay over the call system, it actually shrinks the message down to a 20-second statement. So if I record something and it takes 27, it'll actually compress it a little bit there. So if it ever seems like I'm talking too fast or the sound quality isn't as good there, please just give our office a call and we're happy to clarify whatever that is there. It's just that that software with that system does condense a message into a 20-second message to make sure it fits into everyone's voicemails. If you ever have questions, always feel free to give us a call. But yeah, it's a great system to have.
And what's the response been from residents in Gardner who are now signed up for this, not only getting notifications about the parking bans, but other important issues, as you mentioned, you know, the vaccine, water main breaks, things like that. Are they appreciative of this service?
Very. It's been very helpful. And we've seen a substantial increase in the amount of people signing up for this service just with the vaccines alone. And it's one of the few ways besides Gardner Educational Television that we can get out to people who don't have social media or internet access, particularly with our older populations. So it's been a very big help there. And even with Gardner Educational Television, that only goes to people who are local who have cable through Comcast. So it's one of the few ways that we have to get the greatest number of audiences there.
Now, in terms of the parking ban, for years and years, Gardner had this thing where a certain time in the winter or the fall, parking ban would go into effect, then it would be in effect till April or March or April, and then it would come off. Several years ago, it switched to this kind of storm by storm basis. Are people, for the most part, used to this by now, or are there still some people that kind of have trouble when it's time for the parking ban to go into effect?
Yeah, so our old ordinance used to have it written that from November 15th to April 15th, no on-street parking was allowed at all in the city between the hours of 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. Now, particularly for our diner restaurant establishments and the other breakfast restaurants that we have here in Gardner, that was hard when you open up at 5 a.m. But no one's allowed to park on the street, particularly with some of our downtown restaurants. So it was actually back in 2016. I was just hired as the aide under former Mayor Hawk, and that was one of the first projects I got to work on, was writing that new ordinance. And we worked with one of our city councilors, Councilor Boudreau, to collaborate on that one, and we got it through. However, it was actually written into the ordinance that there is a sunset clause into that that actually expires this summer, where we have to re-review it and get that passed through the council again. So there are some different things that we've noticed could use some tweaking. So we will be doing some of those over the course of the upcoming summer before that sunset period runs out. But for the most part, people are used to it. I mean, a lot of people are appreciative of it too. If you look at this past year that we had between November and January 1st, we really didn't get that many snowfalls. And there were probably only a day or two, and it was right before Christmas that we actually had to call a parking ban. So rather than making it so people's cars were getting ticketed and towed on a day that there was absolutely no weather events happening at all, to only when it's needed and we let people know when that's happening, really is a lot easier for the general public, and just it makes it so that we're serving the community that we have. If you don't have a driveway because you live in an apartment building, sometimes your only option is to park in the street. And it's a lot more convenient to only move your car when you have to than to have to walk to find a parking lot to park your car in every single night, no matter what.
And in talking about places to park your car, for those neighborhoods, the more densely populated areas like downtown, when a parking ban goes into effect, where can those residents bring their cars to so they know that I'm not going to get in trouble with the city, it's not going to get towed by being on the street, but also it's not going to get towed from the parking lot?
So we don't touch the parking lots until 7 a.m. That's why the parking ban goes 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. when it's called. However, there are designated lanes in our public parking lots throughout the city. And there are signs at the parking lots that indicate what lanes those are there too. That way we can turn, basically it's if we have to use the parking lots to turn the plow around to get the other half of the street, we're not going to hit anyone's cars who's parked there. But there is signage in the different parking lots that indicates where those areas are.
And you know, we were lucky, we didn't have a lot of snow early on in the season. Winter is making up for that this week. Where does the city stand right now in terms of snow removal and its budget for winter cleanups?
We went over our snow and ice budget just last night at about 11 o'clock at night. So we went over by about 50 grand so far in the budget. As a lot of people know, but not everyone, the snow and ice section of a city's and town's budget is the only place that we are legally allowed to deficit spend on and under budget for, because we just don't know how much snow is going to fall out of the sky in a given year. So we purposely under budget for that one, and then we go back and fill it later on. Now that has changed, and the laws have changed so that we are allowed to deficit spend in any COVID supplies related items now too. So like cleaning supplies and dedicated sections of the budget for that area. However, the only other place is snow and ice. So we did initially go over it there, which is saying something. We normally go over our snow and ice budget sometime 2 weeks before Christmas is the average. So the fact that we made it this far is actually, on a monetary side, very good to see.
And you mentioned you can now deficit spend for COVID-19, PPE, things like that. Has that happened too in the budget?
We actually haven't. The money that we've been receiving both in the CARES Act and now FEMA's new federal grant that has been released for vaccination purposes has covered all of our COVID expenditures. The initial CARES Act that the city received was $1.8 million. We have about $500,000 left in that in our account. And then the new FEMA grant that just got released to every city and town is you take this population of that location, multiply that by 36%, and multiply the 36% number by 60. So Gardner is getting an additional ballpark $440,000 for vaccine purposes, but we can only use that for vaccine related items. PPE for the vaccination site, sharps containers, security and details for our vaccination centers, things of that nature too. So one of the things that we're doing now is we're working with Haywood Hospital because Gardner's Clinic is a regional clinic. So whenever we have our vaccine clinics, that's something that we collaborate on. So we're going to be setting up a meeting now with all of the town administrators in the catchment basin for our vaccine clinic. And that's Ashburnham, Westminster, Hubbardston, Templeton, and Winchendon to see if we can pool those resources together so that we still don't have to worry about any COVID costs hitting our own respective budgets, since that money can only be used for vaccine purposes and it frees up some of our CARES Act funding that has a lot broader use.
And when you talk about vaccines, that was actually my next topic. Right now, Haywood Healthcare has a clinic site over on Kendall Pond Road at the Polish American Citizens Club. How has that been going? And is that going to be the main site that Gardner uses, or are you looking at incorporating other areas as well?
That is our phase two vaccination site. So everyone in phase two will be vaccinated there. It's been going very well. Our current system that we have running is there will always be an online registration form that'll be available on the city's COVID-19 page at our website. If you go to www.gardner-ma.gov, right at the top of the page, it says COVID-19. And at the bottom of the cover photo, there's also a secondary button. You can click on either of those and it'll take you to the page where you can register. There will also be a call center open every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday here in the city of Gardner from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can call that dedicated number, and there will be an operator on the other line who will be able to register you for the vaccine. We wanted to make sure no internet access issues barred anyone from registering, particularly with the 75 plus population that's currently being vaccinated. We do have a Spanish speaking translator in our as an operator. And we have also signed a business associate agreement with Haywood Hospital that we can also utilize their translation services, that if someone requires a language that's not English or Spanish, we can actually call in that phone line and they can have a third party translator on a three-way calling system in there to help register as well.
Let's talk a little bit more about that phone line, because this is something that people all across the country and all across the state have been pleading for. I know state representatives, state senators have been reaching out to Governor Baker's office to try and have a statewide calling system, but you actually went ahead and kind of adopted the citywide one. How did this come together? And have you talked to other communities that are doing similar things, or are people now looking at Gardner as kind of an inspiration for how to do this?
We were actually one of the first ones up and running statewide, which was great for us to see. I appreciate all the state is doing, and I understand that this COVID-19 pandemic is something that just none of us have had any experience dealing with before, and it's something that we're getting through together. However, when the vaccination appointments opened up for the 75 plus population on top of phase one, we had our initial registration round that went through with Haywood Hospital that we vaccinated last Thursday, and it had 458, because it was vaccine dependent, open appointments for it. And they only had online registration, and the slots filled up in 22 minutes. And one of the things that I cannot stand about the vaccination process, but I know it's a necessary part of it, is I hate that we're treating our vaccine clinics like a Springsteen concert. And our registration is basically, in my mind, like people sitting waiting for Ticketmaster to open up, and you have to sit by to hope you get a ticket for that concert. And that's just, to me, that's not right when you're talking about someone's health. But we only have a limited number of vaccines available, so it's what we have to do right now. So to make sure we made it so that we didn't have to hear the horror stories that my office was getting calls about the next day about, I don't have a computer, but I know my neighbor does, so I ran over to his house to try to make sure that they could do it for me, but by the time they got to their computer, it was all filled up. It's not right. So we did set up our call center. We have right now 7 operators total. Our goal is to get up to 15 by the end of next week. And we are reserving 25% of all appointments at every vaccination clinic from here on out in Gardner for those who require phone call registration. We want to make sure, again, it's as easy as possible. It's as simple and streamlined as possible. And there are no barriers, language or internet related that bar someone from getting the vaccine if they want to get the vaccine.
Now, further down the line, as this does open up to more people, as more people are able to get these shots, is this something that you're going to keep going up? Because I know typically we think of kind of the elderly having trouble with computers, but there's younger folks that don't have access to internet for any number of reasons, or other people that just don't trust computers and don't like to go through computers. I'm one of those people where if I can do it over the phone, I'm probably still going to do it over the phone. So is that something that's going to continue now kind of throughout the rest of this vaccination process?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things, too, that we really committed to is making it, again, like you said, as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. Income barriers is another thing, just like a language barrier, that we have to make sure that people don't run into. And we learned that with our school department this past year, when we bought all of our students new laptop devices, that highlighted how many students don't normally have internet access. And just because we partnered with Comcast for that special internet rate for students on free and reduced lunch and passed out 60 or so hotspot devices to different households, that's just students in the school. There are plenty of people who live in the city that don't have students in the schools who still have those same exact issues. So that is something we do plan on going. I did talk to our technology director yesterday. We are getting 2 other phone lines put into the police department, which is where the call center is housed, to make sure that there's no instances in which the call volume is so high that it actually kills the phone line itself. We had an issue with that with our first run of the call center. However, we have fixed that problem, and this will just help alleviate that even further. But if this is a service that we are doing for the public, mm-hmm. and it's not a business action. It's not something that we're looking to, it's not something we're making money off of. It's a service that we're doing because we should be doing it, and it's the right thing to do. So we are going to be keeping that call center open for as long as we can.
Now, you mentioned kind of how this is a regional distribution. So are you having other cooperation or assistance from some of the surrounding communities in putting together this phone call thing? And are they going to be contributing to this effort as well?
So basically what it is our operators for this are being paid for out of that FEMA grant that we talked about not that long ago. So we are paying them. And when we do need to hire more, we will just again, because there's a lot less people that are 75 plus than meet the next phase of the vaccine. We will be pulling our resources together. I talked to Haywood Hospital this morning, and they have a couple billboards in their catchment basin. One on Elm Street here, there's a couple in Winchendon that they have, but they'll actually be putting the phone number for the call center on that billboard with the hours of the call center so that people know how to move ahead and contact that phone number. I do want to stress too, if you call and it's busy, keep calling. There are several people who are trying to register for the vaccine right now. Mm-hmm. And so just keep calling until you talk to someone. And if you get the voicemail, leave a message. One of the things we're trying to do right now is our registrations will open at 11 o'clock every time appointments are available. As I said earlier, the call center begins at 10 a.m. So the goal is to take all of those who left voicemails and try to get them registered between 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock so that they can get some of those appointments before we open to the general public. That way, if you call before, there's a likely chance you'll get an appointment this time. Again, our goal is just to try to make it as easy and simple as possible for people.
Now, in terms of vaccines, how many are being given out per day on average? Do you have access to that number?
We do. What we don't have day-to-day access for is what our pharmacies are doing with our congregate care facilities. Mm-hmm. We do have 35 congregate care facilities here in the city of Gardner, and 30 of those have already been fully vaccinated. Walgreens and CVS are going around to the different locations there. That we don't have day-to-day access to. We get monthly numbers for, so I don't have accurate numbers on those. However, as I said last week, Haywood Hospital vaccinated 558. Today, the Community Health Connections are vaccinating 220 at a clinic that they have run through our senior center. So we're doing that over on Prospect Street School in South Gardner. And tomorrow, Haywood Hospital will be vaccinating another 640 patients there. And this is all first doses of the vaccine.
So there are other sites in addition to what we are seeing over at the Polish American Citizen Club. That's not the only place where people are getting vaccinated right now.
Correct. So our pharmacies are all taking care of phase one. Mm-hmm. Haywood is mainly doing our phase two. However, before the call center was set up, one of the issues that we could foresee was people just not knowing the process of how to do it. So I sent my staff, Representative Zlotnick sent his staff, and Senator Cronin sent his staff as well, over to the Gardner Senior Center, and we did a tutorial session on a one-on-one, you know, answer any questions you have about the vaccination process, how do I register for the vaccine, and so on from there. And that's where we saw the need just for a lot of people who were like, oh, it's an online registration form, I don't have access to the internet. So before we had the call center set up, we took their names and phone numbers, and the new director of the Senior Center, Michael Ellis, was able to reach out to Community Health Connections and get a separate clinic for those people who went to those information sessions and said that they didn't have access to a computer. And that was our stopgap measure, if you will, in between with the call center being set up and when we were having those sessions. So there are other things that will come up. However, Haywood Hospital at the PACC is our main vaccination site.
One of the other things I noticed on the website is that you actually worked on putting together a tutorial for those who are trying to go through the online setup. I know video has been a huge component of your administration, and this is just one more instance of that.
Absolutely. And I can say anything I want right now on one of these chats, and I will say anything if that's what people want to hear. However, well, not anything. There's something different about actually seeing it and hearing it. And that's one of the main things I've been trying to do with the entirety of my administration since I've been in office from July. That's why we do the mayor's update videos, because you can hear something more than, or play something on a YouTube video in the background while you're getting ready to, or something like that. But actually walking through the steps and showing you how it works is something that we're trying our best to do to, again, make it as easy and simple as possible. I talked about comparing it to concert tickets. When those appointments open up, like I said, the first one took 22 minutes. The one that we recently opened up took a total of 15 before it filled up completely. So our goal is to make sure that when those appointments open up, people aren't trying to figure out what to do, but are just acting. So learn beforehand and then act when it goes has been the goal that we've been doing with that. So there, that tutorial video, it's about 10 minutes long, but it shows you how to register both online and over the phone and what information you'll need to have ready so that you can just go ahead and do it.
And for residents who have been after you.
I will just say too, there will be another tutorial video coming out this week, and it's what to expect when you go to your vaccine appointment. What do you need to bring with you? What will the process be like? And we'll walk you through an entire vaccine appointment. That way you can see what that's like as well.
Do you see other cities reaching out to Gardner to kind of look at what you're doing with these video tutorials and the phone line to say, hey, this should be kind of a model that other cities and towns should be following?
We've had a couple of people reach out and do that, but where we're actually seeing that more is the analytics on that tutorial video that I put on YouTube. If you actually see, YouTube has a feature where you can see the location in which people are watching it, and all over Massachusetts, all over New England, and three in California have been watching that video a lot. And you can, because right now it's almost at 1,000 views. But you can see there's several hits in these random places outside of Gardner, and the majority are in the greater Gardner area. But it's just, it's a unique thing to notice. And hopefully if we can help someone do it better, we did our job here and we're helping other people out with it too, which is just a secondary benefit.
And you didn't even need a cat filter to get that kind of attention on YouTube. Now, for folks
in law school, I loved that video. Let me tell you that. My classmates and I shared that video so many times with our friends last night.
Speaking of videos, for those who have driven around the Gardner area, you might have seen some signs for a Showtime series called Marbles. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that today. Can you confirm whether or not they're filming the new season of Dexter right now in Gardner? And if you can confirm it, have you seen Michael C. Hall yet?
I have not seen Michael C. Hall yet. However, I can neither confirm nor deny that that is taking place here. But I will say, the way you asked your question, I have not seen that actor yet.
I do want to ask, Gardner, heavily featured in Castle Rock. Now there's another series filming in Gardner. How did Gardner become the hotspot for cinema now? And, you know, was there a list that you had to get on? Did you have to kind of scout these projects, or are they now actively coming to Gardner to try and find locations?
So we have a staff member who part of their job description is being our film liaison. So we have a direct city employee who is our liaison with the Massachusetts Film Office. And the Massachusetts Film Office is the state agency whose job is to reach out to different production companies and directors to see, to basically say, this is everything we have for you. If you have a scene that fits this description, let us know. Mm-hmm. So our liaison employee, while it's only a small part of their job, it's also an important part, is to let the Mass Film Office know once a month, this is a list of everything we have available that you could use. This is our scouting camp. This is our old rundown buildings. If you're looking for a horror scene, or if you're looking for a controlled fire, this is an abandoned building that the city owns that we're trying to get rid of. And basically say, this is everything we have to offer that's currently not in use or is in light use that we could close off for a while for you to use. And if you have anyone who's interested, we're happy to talk to them. So he sends that list out to the Mass Film Office, and the Mass Film Office publishes that when they send their list to those producers. Those producers for Castle Rock and our latest endeavors saw what was on that list and thought that they could use it. And here we are.
Now, you mentioned this is a small portion of their job, but I hear about the kind of the work going into this in terms of kind of doing that pre-scouting for these shows. That's a lot of work, and you really kind of have to think creatively and out of the box to look at these buildings that we drive by on a normal basis and be like, well, that would be great for a film.
Yeah, it's something. And our most recent filming partnership looked at a foresty area on one of our lakes that we have in the city. And like, you know what, that's a great place to build a cabin for us to burn it down. And I kind of like took a second back. I was like, wait a second. So it's a great place to build a cabin for you to just burn down. And they're like, yeah, we got a fire scene in our show. And I'm like, oh, okay, you do you. But that's not something that I can see for, you know what I mean? I can't, looking at a landscape, my brain isn't set up to be like, that's a great place to build a cabin for us to tear down. That might be a nice place to build a cabin one day, but that mm-hmm. extra step is where you get that extra collaboration there. So there is an extra step in the thought process when you go ahead and think forward.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about the financial benefit to this? Obviously, it's cool to watch programs on TV and see these scenes of places that you know. I know Castle Rock, you've been able to see some pretty iconic locations in Gardner and also Fitchburg. I look at the hospital, that opening shot where the woman's coming out of the building, and you know that area of Burbank. And while it's neat and all, is there a big financial benefit to having these projects come to the city of Gardner?
For the city itself, there is not a real financial benefit, but we see the financial benefit that goes to the people who are here. These film companies need a place to house their production crew and the actors at the local hotels that we have. They're going to eat at restaurants that we have in the area. There's police details that they have spread out all over their filming site. They actually have taken on fire details as well. So there's an ambulance always on site and a fire truck. If there's ever a cabin that they have to build, that they have to burn down, there's a fire truck there. A lot of the scenes that you see in movies where it's raining, it's actually a fire truck shooting out of a fire hose that's causing the rain that you're seeing on TV. So there's a lot of different opportunities for economic and financial benefit to those within the community. So even though the city may not be getting a check made out to the city of Gardner, there's plenty of people here benefiting from it.
Absolutely. And that money does roll end up back to the city in terms of revenues and tax dollars and that sort of thing. Are there any other projects on the horizon? Obviously, you can't disclose details, but are you aware of any other projects in the future that are looking at Gardner right now?
Tomorrow, Route 140 will be closed in the city of Gardner from the lights at Pearl Street at the intersection of Route 140 and 101 all the way down to Green Street towards Mount Wachusett Community College for roadwork for Marvel. So that is going to be something that we're looking at there. And these things come up really within a couple of weeks notice, to be honest with you, Travis. It's something that someone sees, it looks cool, they want to come out and check it out. And then next thing you know, we're getting ready for a filming. So there's not much we know yet for the coming year, but that doesn't mean that we won't hear soon. Normally June and July is when we hear from the film office that someone's interested in coming to take a look out here for a fall time filming.
Now, have you figured out how to put in a cameo into your contract with them to make sure that you get like a walk-on part?
Multiple people have asked that question. I have yet to figure that out. Apparently, our former mayor in the 90s, Charlie Manca, had a cameo in School Ties that was filmed here in Gardner at the Blue Moon Diner. He was sitting in the booth next door and ordered a order of bacon and eggs. So that was his claim to fame during his 10 years of mayor. So no, I have not figured that part out yet. But if I do figure that out, I will be sure to let you know at that point.
Excellent. Well, I look and I hope for a signed photo if that ever does come through. Do want to shift the focus and bring one of your staff members on with us. I know we're also happy to have on the line the city's economic development coordinator, Maribel Cruz. Good afternoon, Maribel. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the introduction and thanks to Chamber for organizing this event.
Well, we're happy to have you here. And one of the big things I wanted to talk about with this, I was looking online and I understand that there are plans right now to kind of revitalize the rear Main Street area. And I know the two of you are really well versed in this project. What is the scope of this work and how is it going to change the shape of what's happening in downtown Gardner right now?
So this is something I'm very excited with. It's something that I was around when the Lieutenant Governor came to open the new rear Main Street Derby Drive road that the city put in with the help of MassWorks funding. But the area has kind of sat stagnant there since that time. So it's actually something that I'm really excited to see. It'll be a three-story apartment building, 52 units, split with worker and market rate apartment buildings. We're also working with MassWorks and Mass Development to see if we can create an event plaza in that area as well. It should be a very big benefit to the city. You know, one of the things that you hear any person who works in economic development or downtown revitalization talk about is one of the things you need to support your businesses is people to actually visit the businesses and be customers. So this is something that'll get people right there in the downtown to be able to go and shop and eat and make use of what we're having. And then another saying that I think I've said to you multiple times, Travis, in our different interview times, is that one of our goals is to make sure Gardner's more than just the dot that appears on a weather map when they're talking about what place in the state got the most snowfall. Our job here is to make sure that we do something unique and we do something that makes us stand out. So we are more than just that dot. When I went to college, everyone saw the billboard out on Route 2 that said Gardner, the furniture capital. And some people knew about the big chair, but that's all they knew about Gardner. So looking at utilizing that event plaza place to see what we could add to it to make us unique. One of the things we're talking about right now is doing a small little frog pond is the wrong word for it, but building off of that type of a style where we can have some water space in the downtown, but we can also freeze it in the wintertime and have outdoor skating. Things like that that make it unique to the area that draw people into that downtown who can then be like, oh, you know what? It's lunchtime. Let's go to Parker House of Pizza and let's see if we can get lunch there. You know what? Let's go to Priscilla's Candy and grab a chocolate on the way home. So things like that are how we're utilizing that space to try to help grow what we have to offer.
And you mentioned the use of a pond. I know Leominster has had some success with that in the kind of the Monument Square area in recent years. And I look at the attention that's given to the Riverfront Park in Fitchburg, and it seems like people do want to kind of make downtowns more of a communal space, more of an area where people can not just enjoy the shops, but also congregate, you know, once the pandemic is passed and once we're vaccinated, obviously. Is that kind of the ultimate goal too, to kind of create that community, sense of community again?
That's 100% the goal, is making these places that people can come together and gather so that you can just get it out of your system, for lack of a better term. I know that doesn't sound the most professional to say, but when you've been cooped up in a house or to the same group of people in the same setting and people using their dining rooms as their new offices, you just want to get out and get somewhat back to what normal was like. So that is our goal with both that project, and we do have another couple projects out in the front of the downtown area in the Greater Monument Park area that we're just looking to turn into more communal spaces so that people can get together and enjoy times with their friends and different festivals that we can get back to having one time in our food truck festival and different things like that.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of those other projects that are, you know, coming down the pipeline for the downtown Gardner area?
Sure. And Maribel, feel free to pitch in for any of these too. I know you've been working very hard on all of these here. So one of the things that I'll start with talking about is our downtown improvement project. And we're putting new sidewalks, Victorian light posts, crosswalks, and crossing signals all throughout the downtown area. So this coming year, we'll be doing the downtown from Parker Street at the downtown historic square all the way down to Jean Street with those new items and down Connor Street. We're doing that in conjunction when they're putting in the new water and sewer lines. That way both projects can go together and it's less of a disruption. We hate to do the paving this year, disrupt all that, and then go back and close all the businesses again when we do the sidewalks. So we'll do them all together to reduce that amount of time that we're interrupting people there. But then up around the Monument Park area, for the first time ever, we're adding Victorian lights circling the park, a new sidewalk area. Potentially, I know I don't want this to make it seem like this is one of the main things that I'm doing here, but we're looking at adding outdoor skating as well in that area on a temporary basis that gets put up. And then over in the old National Grid substation site next to the Greenwood Pool area, we're looking at converting that into a waterfront park that people can sit and just enjoy some time overlooking Crystal Lake, and turning the old Greenwood Pool indoor site into a pavilion, and then expanding the outdoor pool into a much larger pool, actually doubling the size lengthwise and widthwise, so that we have the capability of hosting outdoor swim meets during the summer months there too. So it's just adding these new amenities to the city and seeing what we're doing. Maribel, do you have anything you'd like to add to any of that?
I wanted to talk about the microenterprise business grant that we were able to receive funding from the Federal CARES Act and from Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Department of Housing and Community Development as a community block grant. So the city of Gardner had received $400,000 to assist local microenterprise businesses with expenses as such as rent, lease, mortgage, and utilities. So we are in the process of approving. We expect to have about 20 applicants approved by March 1st. So there'll be $10,000 for those expenses.
Now, Maribel, about how many people have reached out trying to get in touch with you about these microenterprise grants? Have you found that there's a tremendous need in the area?
There's absolutely a tremendous need. Unfortunately, this grant is only for microenterprise assistance, so businesses, so it's 5 employees or less. But we've had an enormous amount of people reaching out and looking for additional funds, and we've referred them to the PPP, the CARES Act, and so we're very fortunate to have, you know, access and the online accessibility where people can call us or email us in regards to those requests.
And you mentioned microenterprises, you know, businesses 5 people or less, even though they are smaller establishments in Gardner, they certainly make an impact. And I think about those are local jobs often, you know, people that live here locally, those are livelihoods, and that's tax dollars in the city. If we lose those businesses, that's money that Gardner is going to lose.
Absolutely. Not to cut you off, Maribel, but and I know you're not going to like this, but I have to thank Maribel a lot for all she's done with all of this. There's been time I went to get my haircut last month, and my barber stopped me and was like, oh, one of your staff members was just here. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He goes, oh, yeah, Maribel showed up. She had the application there. She walked us through the process. And the amount of businesses that have reached out to my office and just talked about how, you know, she's going to the different businesses and sitting down with the owners and walking them through the information they need, what qualifies and what doesn't, has been something that I have gotten a lot of positive feedback. Like she said, the need is there. That's why we initially planned, got approved to give out $5,000 per business. But when, you know, just going around Maribel, talking to the different groups that were there, seeing the need that was there, we actually doubled. So it's now $10,000 per business that you're eligible to receive funding for. And we're doing everything we can. Like you said, these are the old mom and pop shops that have been open for years and years in the city, just trying to get by. And if this is something that we can do to help them out, it's, we'll do what we can.
Now, Maribel, can you speak a little bit more about how these microenterprise grants will be used? You mentioned that you've got about 20 applicants that you're hoping to help out. How will they be able to use these funds, and how is this going to impact their business?
So the funds will be utilized specifically for rent, lease, mortgage payments, or utilities. So, you know, sometimes these businesses, they just can't afford to pay their employees, so because they're paying all these other expenses. So this grant will specifically be able to help them in those areas.
So this is going to help existing businesses. And one of the things that I thought has been interesting, and this is kind of a pattern I've seen not only in Gardner but in the surrounding areas, is you've even had some businesses come online during the pandemic, you know, decide that they're going to take the plunge and open up. Can you tell us, for you as the economic development coordinator, what's it been like to see businesses finding new ways to survive, but also new entrepreneurs saying, we're going to take the plunge and still start a business during this pandemic?
I'm so proud of our local businesses. They have really, really put every effort that they can. One of the local businesses, she's, you know, heightened her online presence. She's been promoting online, you know, email blast. It's incredible. Facebook, Twitter, all of those, you know, online outlets where people can really market their business. So it's surprising, and I'm very proud of them for sure.
And while we're on the subject of marketing, Mike, I know you were talking about the different avenues and the different projects that are coming up. And obviously those new projects, those changes to downtown are going to be a huge draw for residents. But Maribel, from a business standpoint, when you have all these different changes going on, how does that improve the way or change the way that the city can court potential businesses and potential industry to the city?
Absolutely. I think that just having that online presence alone, the younger generation looks at the online, go to search a restaurant and they see what's there, what's happening, what's going on. Same thing for the online shopping. People are shopping more online these days. And so I think that that will generate more people, more businesses say, okay, Gardner's got something going on. And so that's, I think it's great.
One of the things we've noticed too with the pandemic is a lot of people's business models, particularly our restaurants, have changed over the course of the past year. If you Google a restaurant's name, so Duguay's Chicken, I'll just use that as an example, it'll now say, you know, takeout, delivery, in-person seating, and it has the X's and the check marks for what are there. Well, just because someone was delivery only back last April doesn't mean they're delivery only now. So a lot of stuff we've been looking at now is seeing ways we can reach out to different businesses who have had their models change to see how do you edit your Google listing that 99% of the people are going to look at before they actually go to your website and see that that's not actually accurate information anymore. And working with our business community who may not be the most tech savvy with their online presence and their social media presence to keep themselves going and updating their online platforms to make sure that they represent what's actually happening.
And you mentioned Duguay's, and I know growing up, that was kind of a word of mouth place, was how you found out about this awesome chicken place in Gardner, and you would go to the, you know, the glow in the dark bowling and then go to Duguay's afterwards. but for a lot of these businesses that have been able to just kind of rely on their reputation, they have had to rethink how they market themselves now for the people that aren't the regulars, that don't know, you know, about how their services have changed during the pandemic.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, it's just finding ways to work with them. We'll help any way we can. And if we can't figure it out, we'll try to find someone who does know what they're doing so that we can make that connection.
Now, these microenterprise grants, you're currently reviewing the applications. Are you looking further down the line to see how you can do another round, hopefully, of applications or any other programs down the road to help these small businesses out?
So our grant is on a rolling basis. So up until we run out of funds, we'll be able to take applications and review applications and still try to get additional business to apply.
Now, if businesses are struggling right now, if they're wondering how they can find out more information about this microenterprise grant or any of the other programs or connections that you have in the city, what's the best way, where should they go, and what's the best way for them to contact you?
Yes, so I have a link on the city webpage under business and then microenterprise business program, or call the city hall. I have my email address and phone numbers listed right on the city website.
Excellent. And while we're on the subject of the city website, there was a situation that happened with the Plus Portal system recently. And basically, it was an inappropriate email that was sent out to parents and students. Can you tell us about the status of that investigation and kind of what's going on with that now? Because I know there are some people wondering, did they catch the individual? Are they even able to catch the individual? Or what's going on with that right now?
Excuse me. So, yes, that unfortunately did happen. In our school department, our Plus Portal system is the software that we use to connect teachers and parents and send out information that way. That way, parents register for a system rather than us having a depository of all of the different email addresses to get the reach out. The email was sent to Gardner High School parents, students, and staff. There were three total of them. We are still in an active investigation with that, with the FBI and the Massachusetts State Police Bureau. So both of those agencies have stepped in to assist with that. We at least know the IP address and the location. However, there's not much more I can say at this time, just because that investigation is still ongoing with the FBI. However, we are using this as a learning tool, if you will. And I feel odd saying that because those emails were just downright wrong and racist, and there's no other way to put it. But we partnered with the Anti-Defamation League, who will be doing a series of virtual events after school hours for our students and our families to show that this is something that we don't tolerate, we don't condone, and it's something that we use as a learning tool to show why it's wrong as well. One of the things I said at the other day's school committee meeting is that, you know, a lot of people who hold positions like I have across the country and across the world focus too much on numbers and dollar signs, and they don't realize that behind every number and behind every dollar sign is actually a person. And everything we say in this office, everything we write, everything we do, there's a living, breathing person that's behind that, that gets affected by everything we say and do. So is it unfortunate that an email went out to 5,000 people? Absolutely. And unfortunate is the understatement of the century on that one. However, we do know that behind 5,000 emails is potentially 15,000 people, because if one person says, oh my God, I got this email, and they share that with their aunt and their grandmother, their sibling, and so on from there, it just keeps going from there. So our job is to make sure that we are there to help the people who saw that, who are hurt from the messaging that was sent out from that hack of that student's email server, particularly with the student whose email was hacked, because everyone just assumed it was that student at first. But we got all the counselors we could to help the students who just needed to talk it out. And now we're using that as a learning tool as we move forward. And I do want to say thank you very much to our IT director, Bob O'Keefe, our high school principal, Paula Bulger, and the staff of the high school who showed up before 7 a.m. The three emails were sent out between midnight and 2 a.m. at different intervals before we were able to shut down the email system. And then we had several teachers and staff show up at the high school between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. and go through students' emails, city email accounts, and delete the email from their inbox before they woke up in the morning and were able to open it. Now, again, 5,000 students, because it went out to parents and staff as well, we weren't able to get the full reach of it because parents all have their own private email addresses, but we at least were able to get it off of the majority of the students' inboxes before it happened. And we did the initial deal with it phase, and now we're doing the learn with it. Excuse me one second.
Bless you.
Excuse me about that. But we're doing what we can, and it's something that no one knows how to deal with it. No one wants to be able to deal with it, but it's here, and we're doing what we have to do.
And you're certainly not the only city that has had a situation like this happen, and I'm sure you won't be the last, but it's great to hear that the city is being as proactive as you are. And you mentioned, you know, taking what is a terrible incident and turning it into a learning phase to help people understand that, hey, these opinions, these statements are wrong, but also, you know, from a safety perspective, here's how we can avoid this again. Is the city implementing any different protocols or kind of education for students in terms of internet safety now, not just kind of, you know, from work from the Anti-Defamation League and tackling the racist component but also from a safety, hey, don't click that link kind of perspective?
So yes, we have already implemented all of that. We've already sent out all of that in education materials, and we've strengthened our own firewall that we have on our end. Our school systems themselves, the firewall would not have been able to, the person would not have been able to get through the firewall. But since this was an outside vendor that was able to sneak in that way, that's where we had that vulnerability there that we've since closed up.
And it is, as you're dealing with all these home networks now and home email addresses, it's not just, you know, an in-house situation where students are in the building.
Exactly. And a lot of it too is some restrictions had to be loosened because people were Zooming in from home. Now that we found ways to offer those services without having to reduce restrictions, all our restrictions are back up to the top level. And again, if it wasn't for the fact that that was a outside contractor that we utilize, it wouldn't have been able to happen. But now it made us look at, so we look at all our other outside contracting services and we've improved those as well too.
While we have a few more minutes, I do want to talk about a positive piece of news coming out of the schools. I understand the latest Williams-Rockwell Foundation allotment for the high school is being issued. Can you tell us a little bit about this foundation for those who aren't familiar with this fund?
Yeah, so back in 2016, the city sold a Norman Rockwell painting that had been hanging in the Gardner High School building for years. The quick Cliff Notes version of the story is that Mr. Williams, who was the principal of Gardner High School at the time, went up to Norman Rockwell's studio in Vermont and asked if he could show off some art at the high school. And there was a painting that Mr. Rockwell was unable to get rid of, if you will, and no one wanted it. It was titled Willie Gillis in Convoy, and it was his Willie Gillis character sitting in the back of a army vehicle during the war. And during that time, a lot of the war art was popular. However, it was getting towards the end and no one was purchasing it. So he gave it as a gift to Gardner High School. So it hung in Gardner High for years and years. But then when Norman Rockwell started taking off as realizing they're a lot more expensive and worth a lot of money, there was a concern that the school did not have the proper security system to protect the art, but also didn't have the infrastructure to protect it from damage. It was hanging just as is in a hallway. If someone walked by and had their stack of books, but their pen was hanging out and the pen was clicked, there could potentially be someone who just took a pen and just crossed right over the Norman Rockwell, or someone tripped and spilled a coffee or things like that. So it was actually put into storage and then forgotten about. And then that was probably early 2000s. And then later on, we were cleaning out a closet and boom, there's this Norman Rockwell painting in a crate in the middle of a safe in Gardner Middle School. So we sold the painting for $1.9 million and put the money from the sale into a trust fund. And the interest on that fund is given out as grants to teachers and staff to help supplement the educational needs of the district above and beyond what we budget here at the school district. So we were able to give out $130,000 this year in grant funding. We actually reopened the application period for our teachers now because we still have $77,000 on the table just with the way the market was running in the past quarter. But to date, we've given out just under $300,000 worth of grant funding.
And the newest funding, I understand, is going to be helping the Landry Auditorium.
Yes, $100,000 of this year's funding is actually going to redo all of the flooring and seating in Landry Auditorium. Last year, we did an acoustic improvement for that area. So there's a several phase process in which we are upgrading our systems in Landry Auditorium. That's Gardner High School. For those of you who may not be familiar with Landry Auditorium, Mayor Cyril Landry Memorial that we have here. And if you think about it, you know, for a lot of people who don't participate in the fine and performing arts, an auditorium at a school is where you have your school assemblies. But there's so much more that's there. That's where the musicals take place. That's where our concerts take place. That's where art shows take place. And a lot of these regional shows and concerts and different activities that take place, Gardner hasn't really been in the discussions to host these places because when you walk in, it's really just not the nicest auditorium. And a lot of it is just visual appeal. I could have the most acoustically sound and technology up-to-date auditorium in the area. I don't, but I'd like to. But even if I did, with the current setting, people still wouldn't go there just because it's not pretty looking. So this will at least replace all of the flooring, all of the carpets, tear out all of the old chairs, put new chairs in, and get it so that we can start building from there and seeing how we can continue to renovate that space.
Now, for viewers and listeners who will want more information on signing up for the vaccine, or they want more information on the microenterprise grants or getting in touch with Maribel, what's the best way for them to contact your office?
You can always give me a call at 978-630-1490-1490. And one of us here will give you a call. You can email me at mayor@gardner-ma.gov. If you are interested in, if you have questions about the vaccination process, we have a dedicated email for that through Haywood Hospital. So it's vaccinate@haywood.org. Or if you would like to volunteer at any of our vaccination clinics, you can email helpvaccinate@haywood.org. And they need your name, contact information, the availability in which you can help out at, and what you'd like to do. If you are a medical professional or a retired medical professional or a medical student, you can actually help volunteer with the medical processes of the vaccine, either with the injections or also the observation requirement of having someone help in case anyone has a reaction within 15 minutes after receiving the vaccine. And you can do that as well. They just also need to include your medical credentials with that. So yeah, go ahead.
After you.
Oh, I was just going to say, we have plenty of different availability for people who are not medical professionals to also help out. But if you'd like to help out in any way, just let us know. Again, this is for our phase two vaccination site at the PACC before we move on to phase three at both Mount Wachusett Community College's parking lot and Gardner High School's parking lot through our drive-through clinics.
And for those who are joining us, Gardner Mayor Mike Nicholson, as well as Gardner's Economic Development Coordinator, Maribel Cruz, want to thank both of you for taking the time to speak with us today. Don't forget, tomorrow you can get yourself tax ready with an expert. You can join us for the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce's Express webinar, Tax Basics, at 11 a.m. with Karen Spinelli from Spinelli CPA. You can also catch our next live chat with Mayor Mazzarella from Leominster. That's going to be this Friday at 11 a.m. For more information on those events, a link to our new podcast, Inside North Central Massachusetts, and other programs, simply head to northcentralmass.com. That's northcentralmass.com. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you all very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Inside North Central Massachusetts. This podcast is produced by the North Central Massachusetts Chamber of Commerce. For more information on this episode, links to other episodes on Podbean, or if you have any questions, please visit northcentralmass.com.